The loss of a child through abortion, miscarriage, or stillbirth affects the emotional health of families. Feelings of anger, sadness, and regret can be overwhelming. There is hope and healing in the aftermath of a reproductive loss. Call the International Helpline at 866-482-LIFE to talk with someone who has been where you are and healed to help others. Your call is confidential. 866-482-LIFE.
Welcome to Today's Issues, offering a Christian response to the issues of the day. Here's your host, Tim Wildman, President of the American Family Association.
All right, welcome everybody to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network for this Monday, October the 20th, 2025. Thanks for listening to AFR and to this program we call Today's Issues. I'm Tim Wildman, and joining me in studio is Ed Vitagliano. Good morning, Ed.
Good morning, Tim.
Fred Jackson.
Hi there, Tim.
Man, fellas, a lot going on in this world since I went to Boston.
Yes.
Please,
it wasn't even in the springtime.
Please come to Boston, and I went with about 100 of our other folks who support us. A lot of our supporters were with us in our Boston historical tour last week, and met a lot of great folks. Wesley and Walker led the tour, and that's my two sons. And then Stephen McDowell and Timothy Barton from Wall Builders. So it was so popular that they had to shut it off two months ago. It was sold out. So they're going to go again next year, next September.
Oh, okay. All right.
So, and I told him, you need to recruit Ed. That's Ed's old stomping ground, Boston.
Yeah, as long as I don't have to take care of the tour.
No, you just got to show up and eat.
Oh, then I'm recruit me. I volunteer.
Show up and eat and get on the bus and ride around. That's all you got to do. Went to. Now, how many did you grow up in Boston or Nashua or both?
No, but well, I was born in Melrose, Massachusetts. So you have Boston, the actual city, and of course it's surrounded the Greater Boston area. I was born in Melrose, and my childhood was in Peabody and Wakefield, Mass. And then my dad moved the family across the state line to Nashua, New Hampshire, and that's where I spent the rest of my
life. But that's only half an hour from Boston, right?
Yeah.
Or from the Boston
area.
It's not far.
And then I, of course, went to Boston College.
Right.
And so I say the Boston area when someone says that's where I grew up. I no longer say New England because, and this is a true story, because I was teaching high school history way back in the 80s at a Christian school. First day of class, 11th graders. They said, "Where are you from? You have like an accent." And I said, "I'm from New England." And the kid sitting in the front row said, "Cool, you're from Europe." And I said, "Oh, this is going to be a tough class." No, I'm not from Europe. New England.
You know, of course, Fred, you're from
Further north.
Further north. But now, if you get if you come in contact with a native Bostonian who's lived there for a long, long time, like we did at the restaurant we went to, one of the restaurants we went to, you have to watch their lips move in order to understand what they're saying. And because, they have a very unique Bostonians have a very, very unique.
It's not just the accent; it's the words. So what you would call, for example, I'm sure you and Fred would call like a water fountain, we called it a bubbler.
Right.
It's different words. It was a water bubbler, is what we called it. So with the accent, it's bubbler.
Yeah.
And it's just.
It's a whole unique thing. It's a unique language.
Yes, language unto itself.
It's part of the English language family tree,
but it's a
unique. Anyway, we had a great time. If you want information on next year's Boston tour, including the Freedom Trail, and also went to Concord and Lexington, and went to where the Mayflower landed.
Yeah, how about the Constitution?
The Constitution went there.
About yeah. the ship, I mean.
The ship, the USS, yes, went there. So a lot of great things to see in the Boston area. If you've never done that and wanted to go, I think they're going in September. So check it out. WIL, here's a website to check it out, wildmangroup.com. Wildman, W-I-L-D-M-O-N, group.com is the website for the Boston tour, and the other tours will be going on in 2026. All right, Fred, what is happening in this here world?
Well, let's pretend for a moment that it's the nightly newscast, and here are the headlines for today. The ceasefire in Gaza is holding again. No one knows for sure how long. Volodymyr Zelensky, the Ukrainian leader, says his meeting with Trump was positive, despite some tense moments. And last but not least, President Trump calls the leader of Colombia a lunatic. Those are tonight's headlines.
That's the headlines. Oh, me. Trump did call another foreign leader a lunatic?
Yeah, I'm shocked by that.
Okay, well.
Is this the Colombian president?
Yes.
Trump most of the time holds his tongue.
So this is unusual.
Not lately.
So start with that one. What is that about?
That is all about that Trump is accusing the Colombian leader of basically, much like Venezuela, sending dangerous drugs to the United States. And Trump basically at one point this weekend, I'm not sure, he has a lot of extra time on the weekend and he just bursts. He says, you know, unless we can... they agreed to stop this growing bad drugs, et cetera, ship to the United States. We'll go down there, and I'm paraphrasing a little bit here, we're going to just burn those fields. So when he's through with Maduro in Venezuela, he's going to take on Colombia, or perhaps
Gustavo Petro.
Simultaneously.
Wait a minute. Burn those fields.
Okay. Where the drugs are grown.
Burn those fields. What you know, he's talking about literal fields in the country of Colombia where they're growing these is that what he's saying?
Yeah, Trump called, besides a lunatic, he called him an illegal drug leader. To back up his point, President Trump's point, he says he will slash assistance to Colombia. Apparently we have been giving foreign aid to Colombia, and he says we're not going to do that anymore.
Yeah. And what do you think about this diplomacy we got going on here?
Well, first of all, I don't mind tough talk with these foreign leaders, especially in our own hemisphere. I think my personal opinion, although guess how many presidential campaigns I've run and won? Zero.
Okay.
So President Trump has certainly, you know, I would say he has his approach. He's not taking advice from me. I think you do this kind of thing behind the scenes. All right. You talk to Gustavo Petro. I just like saying it.
This is the president of Colombia. That's the first I've heard of him. What's his name?
Gustavo Petro.
Gustavo.
Gustavo. Gustavo. Gustavo.
Okay.
Petro.
Petro. Like gas.
Yeah, petrol. Yeah, petrol. Yeah. Petrol.
Okay, Gustavo Petro is the president of Colombia, and this is who Trump's got in his crosshairs, right?
Yes.
Now. Yep.
So to me, you call old Gustavo
up. Call him up.
And you tell him, you're going to have to crack down on the drug cartels.
I don't think crack's a word you want to use, but go ahead.
Okay.
Change the word.
Yeah. Slap them around a little bit. And let me tell you, these drug cartels are rooted in deeply into some of these countries. Colombia would probably be one of them, Venezuela and others. And a lot of corruption in some of these Central and South American countries. Police, you know, are on the payroll for the drug cartels. Mayors get murdered if they don't cooperate. So you're basically looking at tearing your country apart because drugs pay the bills in these big countries. But you don't, my personal opinion, you don't conduct some of this foreign policy out in public unless you've already done it privately. Maybe he has, but.
I think with President Trump, private diplomacy is, Yeah, but I think for the most part that ship has sailed.
Yeah.
He usually posts, for better or for worse, he's gonna put it on True Social.
Yeah.
You know.
I'm not sure I'm crazy either about the idea of the U.S. military getting involved, which they would have to. I've already said on the air, I don't like them blowing up these boats that, you know, in my mind, if we're sure these are drug runners, this is I'm talking about the videos we see of these boats, then you arrest them when they get into U.S. waters. And I'm worried that the military is going to hit someone who's not actually involved.
Because we are blowing up boats.
Yes.
People are dying. Our United States military is blowing up boats in the Gulf of Mexico.
Gulf of America.
Oh, my bad.
Yeah.
That Gulf out there.
Yeah.
There is the lower Caribbean. So.
Yeah. Anyway. So if we get the military involved, we could get dragged.
We're involved. Things. You mean in Colombia, though, the ground.
Yes, on the ground. Yeah, even in Venezuela, you know, we ran some, I don't know, were they B-52s or B-2 bombers off the coast?
B-52s from a base in Louisiana. And we kind of flew right up to the point Venezuelan airspace.
Yeah.
Kind of like
what
the Russians do to us.
Yeah.
Up in Alaska, you know, it's
just prove we can do it if we want to.
You show them the bottom of your airplane and it's a show of might. It's a muscle thing.
All right.
But this all started, by the way, Pedro was at the United Nations a few weeks ago when all the world leaders were giving their speeches. And what ticked President Trump quite a bit was that while he was there, Pedro gave a speech in which he told American soldiers to disobey Trump's orders. And he was talking about the Trump administration going after illegals, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, I'm no fan of Petro or Maduro.
No.
And these are not good people, and they don't like us, mm-hmm. and they don't like Trump. And part of me wants to say, go ahead then, you know, you want to kick a tiger in the hindquarters, you better have a plan for dealing with his teeth.
Yeah.
That's an old Tom Clancy line in one of his books. But the problem is I don't want U.S. troops being put in danger.
I seriously doubt Trump would send troops on the ground.
Well, there was a story last week, though, with regards to Venezuela, CIA operatives, I think it was the way it was described. In Venezuela.
I'm sure that probably goes on. Probably goes on
probably everywhere.
Around the world. Yeah, everybody's spying on everybody.
Yeah.
Aren't they?
Yep.
All right, you're listening to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. Thanks for listening. Tim, Ed, and Fred, and Steve Paisley Jordahl will be with us next hour. What's your next story, Fred?
Well, it's about 20 after 2 in the afternoon in Israel, and at this moment, the Gaza ceasefire is holding. In fact, this morning, U.S. envoys Steve Witkoff and Jared Kushner arrived there to try to shore up things, make them a little bit more secure. This is what they had to say before they headed there. Cut number 2.
Hamas right now is doing exactly what you would expect a terrorist organization to do, which is to try to reconstitute and take back their positions.
Right.
The success or failure of this will be if Israel and this international mechanism is able to create a viable alternative.
But is it remotely possible that American troops go in to...
Highly unlikely.
No.
We're going to have a weapons buyback program. This is all linked to amnesty and disavowing violence if Hamas people want to stay there. We are well on top of it.
Who is that? That last voice?
Steve Witkoff.
Okay. He sounded kind of like Trump in that.
I guess maybe if you hang around.
Yeah, but if you're around somebody for long enough, like Fred's saying there.
Yes. And if this ceasefire holds, the next step in this 20-point agreement is that Hamas must disarm. And I tell you what, if I was a betting man, Hamas disarming, we know what they've been doing over the last several days. They've been executing Palestinians who they feel have been unloyal to them, just in the streets, in Rafah in particular. So, and two Israeli soldiers were killed in the last 48 hours. But there is a peace there for the moment. Now, President Trump was asked about all of this. This is what he had to say about what's going on in Gaza right now. Cut three.
We're going to have to see what's happening. We want to make sure that it's going to be very peaceful with Hamas. And as you know, they've been quite rambunctious. They've been doing some shooting, and we think maybe the leadership isn't involved in that. You know, some rebels within.
Is the ceasefire still in place?
Yeah, it is. Yeah, it's...
So there you have it.
All right, help me, fellas. Help me out here. Mm. Okay. Let me ask a question about this. You may or may not have the answer to it. First of all, President Trump and his administration and his team there deserve great credit for their initiating this 20-point plan.
Absolutely.
Yep.
And for getting both parties, Israel and the Hamas, to agree to the terms and conditions. I know that Jared Kushner, his son-in-law, and what Marco Rubio and others, I don't forget, there was another gentleman who was on the ground during the negotiations representing the Trump administration. I can't recall his name. But anyway, in Egypt. So they got all this worked out. But getting something worked out in an agreement and then following through with it completely is two different things. Now, the first step has been followed through with, for the most part, and that is with freeing of the hostages.
Yes.
Those hostages that were alive, mm-hmm. 20 of them?
20.
Were freed.
Yes.
Okay. Then the bodies of the deceased, some of them were returned, but not all of them, right? By Hamas to Israel. Now, I don't even know if they can, who knows, if somebody's been passed away for a year or something like that, their body's decomposed, who knows where they are? I mean, how do you even guarantee you're going to get them back? You know what I'm, yeah. You know what I'm saying? The other thing, the big thing was getting the hostages back that were alive, and that's been done.
Yes.
The other thing is with Hamas and Israel is who governs Gaza now? If Hamas is supposed to lay down their weapons, and they've been running Gaza as basically a gang runs a neighborhood. They got guns and they know where you live. And if you don't do what they say, or if you question their authority, you know, you're going to end out on the street getting executed like those people did last week. So who's going to govern Gaza? Who's going to enforce their no weapons? Who are you supposed to talk to initiate? Maybe all these things have been already explained and I just missed them, but do you guys know where that big second stage is supposed to go?
There is supposed to be, we were told, a commission, international commission, representatives from various countries.
Arab countries, Muslim countries are also...
There may, all over.
A little former, UN convention there, huh?
Former Prime Minister Tony Blair of Britain is supposed to play a major role in that. But Trump, the United States, will be involved, apparently, in helping to rebuild Gaza. Now, the question is, the Palestinian leadership in the West Bank, they want a part in this. I'm not clear whether they have been given a part in this. So, Hamas, and the thing with Hamas, unlike our U.S. soldiers, Hamas doesn't wear uniforms. How do you know that you have dealt with all the leadership of Hamas? You don't.
No.
They can grab a weapon anytime.
Listen, there are probably secretly millions of the, well, there's 2 million. There's 2 million Gazans / Palestinians in the Gaza Strip.
Correct.
Okay. And probably if you could search, I don't know, but they're war-torn, they're beleaguered, they're exhausted, they have to be, their homes are in ruins, their businesses are in ruins, they're, because of the war, because Israel had to fire on them to keep them from doing more terrorist acts, but I don't know. Anyway, maybe it's just a lot of things that have been explained that I don't, haven't heard, but you're talking about, when you say rebuild, you're talking about 5 to 10 years.
Oh yeah.
Of what do you do with all this rubble? Where do you get the heavy equipment to get rid of all that, and where do you put it? I mean, have you seen this? Have you seen this? This is miles and miles and miles of places that are uninhabitable anymore. It looks like something out of one of those futuristic apocalyptic movies. Uh-huh. So I don't know. Unless the best thing to happen would be for the people of Gaza to have a vote and to vote in a leadership that's not does not include Hamas, which they could start over with and have some kind of a hope for the future. Because right now, with Hamas being still in charge and still having weapons, and I don't think they're giving up their weapons, I think it's probably going to turn into a gang fight with various factions of Hamas in the streets, if you can see the streets, fighting each other out for who's going to be the top leadership there. So,
well, and we do need to remember that the Israeli Defense Force, the IDF, will be keeping the peace. So they're not in other words, they're not leaving and abandoning Gaza and Gaza, the Gaza Strip or Gaza City, until this peace plan moves along. So there'll be this multinational force, which what I've read is just about 200 people. Like the International Red Cross is also there to help with supplies. That they oversaw the transfer of hostages. So I guess that's why it's a 20 point peace plan. You got to hit your steps. And the next one, as Fred said, is the key. Hamas has to throw their weapons down.
But was it? Am I the only one who thought that the celebrations were just a little bit premature?
Oh, I agree with you 100%.
Yeah, I mean, Trump took a victory lap before the clock ran out.
Yes.
And again, well, I don't disagree with what you guys are saying, simply because we've all grown up watching the Middle East and saying, and it makes you cynical because you go, peace in the Middle East? I hardly think so. On the other hand, I would say, even if it doesn't survive, he did get, at least for a while, a ceasefire there, and maybe that's something to build on.
As I said, I give them all the credit.
Yeah.
I'm just saying, seeing the more prudent thing to do in this situation, given the volatility, is to not proclaim victory, the peace. We've got the first peace in 3,000 years. Is that what Trump said?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. He's
a little over the top, maybe?
He was seeing this as a done deal.
Yes.
And 20 steps is a long way away.
That's what I'm saying. Why don't you just say, okay, yeah, when we get past step 10, then I'll go to Israel and we'll celebrate. But until then, right. it's a trust but verify type situation. Instead, they just went to Israel and went to Egypt and just had a meeting with them. And those are anyway. That's just me. I'm like Fred. We're just a little skeptical of celebration before we get to point number two.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. Out of 20.
Yeah. And I look at the West Bank. The West Bank is governed.
We need to define this for people because they don't know. I think the average person doesn't know the difference. When we say West Bank, that's a news term that's often used. There's a difference between the West Bank, which is also a place where many Arabs live.
Yes.
Which is part of Israel, but it is Israel, but it's called the West Bank of the Jordan.
Yes.
And the Gaza Strip. They're the same. They're both Arab peoples, but they're different governance.
Yes.
Go ahead.
Yes, different governance. But the West Bank establishment, run by the Palestinians, now includes like Bethlehem, Jericho, those areas.
Yes.
But they've existed. They're still getting money from the United States, but they're terrorists there too. And they come into Jerusalem. And so we have to kind of try to remember they don't think the way that we do here.
Yeah, but the Israelis have pretty well locked down that, Fred.
Yeah.
They've pretty well locked down that people coming over from the West Bank to do terrorist activities in Jerusalem. We'll be back momentarily with more of today's issues.
We're living in a time when truth is under attack. Lies are easy to tell, easy to spread, and easy to believe. But truth is costly. And nowhere is the cost greater than for mothers in crisis. When a woman is told abortion is her only option, silence and lies surround her. But when she walks into a preborn network clinic, she's met with compassion, support, and the truth about the life growing inside her. That moment of truth happens through a free ultrasound, and it's a game changer. When a mother sees her baby and hears that heartbeat, it literally doubles the chance she'll choose life. Preborn Network clinics are on the front lines, meeting women in their darkest hour, loving them, and helping them choose life and sharing truth. Friend, this is not a time to be silent. It's a time for courage, for truth, for life. Just $28 provides one ultrasound and the opportunity for a mother to see her baby, to help her choose truth and life. Donate today. Call #250 and say baby. That's #250 baby. Or give online at preborn.com/AFR. That's preborn.com/AFR.
Thriving families, a powerful military, and a strong economy are the three pillars needed to rebuild our country.
Psalm 11:3 asks, if the foundations are destroyed, what can the righteous do? In the video, Three Steps to Rebuilding America, Walker Wildman addresses that question.
If our military is not serviced, so to speak, it's not going to be ready to perform, and it ultimately becomes ineffective.
Find Three Steps to Rebuilding America and much more at stream.afa.net.
The Lord looks down from heaven on all mankind to see if there are any who understand, any who seek God. Psalm 14:2.
American Family Radio.
This is Today's Issues. Email your comments to comments@afr.net. Past broadcasts of Today's Issues are available for listening and viewing in the archive at afr.net. Now, back to more of Today's Issues.
Hey, welcome back, everybody, to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. Tim, Ed, and Fred, we thank you for listening to AFR. So this federal government shutdown, it's been going on how long now?
Week three.
Yep.
Okay. Is it starting to impact the everyday person out there yet, Fred?
Well, it depends. It's unfolding over time. Who doesn't get money? There's EBT cards holders may start.
Are they not getting money?
They may start to not get their money.
You'll see some riots.
You probably will.
If that happens.
The big thing, and Transportation Secretary Sean Duffy was on Fox this morning, air traffic controllers. Now, in the last pay period, they got half a paycheck. We are told now in this period coming up, they're not going to get anything. Now, they are regarded as essential workers, but there have been places already where these ATC guys do not show up for work. Sean Duffy talked about this morning. It's cut number 7, Brent.
Yeah, so first off, I want to say thanks to all of the air traffic controllers who show up to work. They're doing great work. They got, a partial paycheck a week ago Tuesday. Their next paycheck comes a week from Tuesday. And in that paycheck, there will be no dollars. They don't get paid. And so I think what you might see is more disruptions in travel as more of them look to say, how do I bridge the gap between the check that's not coming and putting food on my table? And we've heard they're taking Uber jobs. They're doing DoorDash, figuring out ways to keep their families afloat. I mean, this is a very real problem, Ainsley. And again, a lot of them are paycheck to paycheck. So I hope we don't see more disruptions. But as this gets closer to payday, I think you could see more of that through the airspace.
Well, that's not very reassuring.
Absolutely not.
If the last people we need to, take off is, excuse the pun there, is air traffic controllers. Because, I mean, I'm not in any way suggesting that anything would be intentionally dangerous that they would do. I'm just saying that our country can't afford for the air traffic controllers to be not being paid and then find other jobs and, who knows, are they working 8 hours at another job and then trying to come in and do something like that, you know, which would require their full physical and mental attention. You know what I'm saying?
Right. No, absolutely.
I guess that's what I'm trying to get across. We can't afford for that to happen. Now, these federal government shutdowns are usually over by now.
Yes.
And surely it'll come to an end in the next week.
Well,
Ed, have you been part of the negotiations, Ed?
I've been in the negotiations, and I'm telling you, they're not going well.
You talk about Italians start negotiating, people listen. am I right? That's the history of
You're right if you want to go with ethnic stereotypes. Yeah, sure.
I'm trying to give you
into the Atlantic Ocean with
that's cement, never happened before.
Cement overshoes. All right. So to me, Fred, you correct me if I'm wrong. The biggest sticking point here is that it's over healthcare costs and Obamacare. The premiums are set to go up, and the federal government has to reinstate the subsidies.
Yes.
That the federal government pays so people can go on Obamacare. Obamacare is actually very expensive. It's a very expensive form of health insurance. So the subsidies coming from the federal government are the only way that a lot of families can maintain their health insurance through Obamacare. The Democrats have wanted to include illegal immigrants in this. Yes. The Republicans say no way. Mm-hmm. And the Republicans have always said their goal was to eliminate Obamacare. I don't think that's going to happen at this point. So to me, that's where the sticking point is. The Republicans are saying, no, we are not going to have the government subsidies for illegal immigrants. Mm-hmm. Have I got that right?
Yeah. No, and what the Republicans are saying, okay, let's get the government back to work, and then we can negotiate on the new fees for Obamacare. You're right about the Republicans definitely do not want healthcare dollars going to illegal immigrants. All right? So that is the big issue. The House Speaker and the Majority Senate Leader are both saying, let's get the government open again. We'll sit down, and we'll negotiate with you. And so far, the Democrats are not willing to do this.
Well, so I was reading the House Minority Whip, Catherine Clark. She's from Massachusetts. And her argument here is that this is the one battle where we have leverage.
Yeah.
So the Republicans are saying, let's get the government open. We can start negotiations. Democrats are saying, no, keeping the government shut down is our only point of leverage,
yeah,
to get you to come and agree with us.
Well, the other thing that's talked about in the background, and some Republicans have said there's still the option of getting rid of the filibuster, which means you'd only have to have 50, and you know, just a few senators. So far, I believe 5 Democrat senators are needed, and they have been willing to budge. That's where we are. We know we're talking about air traffic controllers, and I just would invite our audience. There is an app called FlightAware. You probably have heard of it.
Yeah.
I'm showing the guys here.
Okay.
Listeners.
I'm looking. Fred's showing us in studios, FlightAware.com, right,
this
Fred?
Is just the East Coast. Those are all the airplanes.
Planes in the air right now?
That ATC is managing, air traffic controllers.
Oh, wow.
And, you know, you
that's
can
scary.
Zoom in on New York and Washington and Boston, and there's bad weather. That makes it all the more complicated. So when Sean Duffy talks about concerns about air traffic controllers, some of them having to go out and find Uber jobs, he said,
yeah,
to put food on the table, that puts a lot of pressure. And I tell you what, you know, Democrats, of course, Democrats have the mainstream media still on their side. The mainstream media is painting the Republicans as the bad guys in this and will continue to do so. The other sidebar story to this is that Chuck Schumer took a lot of heat when he caved there back several months ago on a continuing resolution. So now many people say he's facing a primary next year. AOC would like his job. That's the talk.
Is she going to go after his Senate seat?
Yes. Yes.
AOC v. Schumer in New York, huh?
Yes. That's what they say.
I think Schumer loses that race.
Do you really?
I do.
Let me ask you this question. So what about Social Security?
Social Security, as far as I know, is still okay. Medicare, all of those things.
So those things are untouchable?
Yes.
Okay. At this, so what about pay for our military?
What President Trump has said and he has ordered, there are pockets of money all over the government. He has said, I will see to it that our military people are paid.
Okay. Of course, I think everybody expects this to be over in the next week, don't you think?
I thought it'd be over by now.
I thought it would be over by now, too.
Yeah.
I think it'll be over in the next week. They'll get something worked out. But, and then you go, why did we go through 3 weeks of shutdown if you were going to do this? if you were going to do this in the first place.
Yeah, you want to see if the other side will blink. I think that's
nobody's blinking right now.
No.
Although there was a man named Anthony.
Anthony Blinken.
Once upon a time, who was the Secretary of State for Joe Biden, Joe Otto Penn Biden.
Yeah.
Was that real, that picture that Trump put out about the photographs in the White House on the wall, the portraits of the presidents?
Oh, with the Otto
Penn?
Biden?
Yeah. For Biden's portrait in the White House, it had a picture of the Otto Penn. Was that real? Was that...
I don't know.
Photoshopped.
I assumed it was real, but I'm getting fooled left and right on images and stuff when it's AI.
Oh, the deep fakes are getting.
And apparently it's related to how old you are, because a lot of young people I see on social media say, "How can boomers not realize that's AI?" And I'm going, "I don't know. It's a moving picture. It looks real to me." And they all spotting this stuff.
I think
right
there, Ed. You know, you mentioned me making ethnic stereotypes about Italian people. I think right there, you were trying to say that dumb people have a Southern accent.
Okay, let me change. You're very sensitive to this.
Fred, wind back the tape.
Let me change this. Hey, well, it looks like a real picture to me. You know what I mean? Hey, oh, Andrew.
Okay, you can be dumb and live up north too, yes, right? Is that what you're saying?
That's right.
Oh, well, thanks for that.
And the further you go north,
the dumber you are.
They get. you cross that line into our 51st state.
All right, Fred, what's the next story? Fred, you're just bringing such happy news to everybody today with all these rumors and war stories.
All right, you want happy news?
We're going to attack Colombia, Venezuela. Who else are we going after?
Well, maybe we kind of teased Ukraine story. We perhaps should get back to that.
Oh, good.
There was a nasty meeting between President Trump and Vladimir.
Is this the good news? You were promising?
Yes, this is the good news.
This is the good news. However, no. Vladimir Zelensky this morning released a statement, and he's a little bit happy.
Okay.
All right. He says his meeting with U.S. President Donald Trump last week was positive, highlighting what he sees as continued American interest in economic deals with Kyiv. All right. So here we are. Let's remember, you know, where all this got started. Remember the heated meeting between Zelensky and Trump way back when?
Which
January, February.
This is like a bad couple you see out at dinner all the time. No. Always fighting.
Yes. So, a nasty meeting, and then they kind of made up, and then Trump had his meeting with Putin in Alaska, and they were buddies for a few minutes, and then Putin basically continued bombing the very next day, so Trump was very upset with him over that. And then about 10 days ago, President Trump said, you know, to Ukraine, hey, why don't you guys, you know, we'll work with you and you can keep all your original territory. Remember that? Because he was mad at Putin.
Right.
But now in the last few days, we have President Trump saying something else to Zelensky. Cut number four.
No, we never discussed it. We think that what they should do is just stop at the lines where they are, the battle lines. You have a battle line right now. The rest is very tough to negotiate. Go home, stop killing people, and be done. Let it be cut the way it is. It's cut up right now. I think 78% of the land is already taken by Russia. I said cut and stop at the battle line. Go home. Stop fighting. Stop killing people.
So he is telling Volodymyr Zelensky, just give up Donetsk and Luhansk, which I think is in the southeastern portion of Ukraine.
And eastern, yeah.
And some people are saying Trump is now telling Zelensky to do that because Trump has a meeting coming up with Putin again in Hungary.
Right, in Budapest.
There are no solid lines yet. This story keeps moving around back and forth. Trump keeps moving and changing his position over and over again.
This region in the east and southeast of Ukraine is highly industrial, has a lot of minerals. It also produces a lot of the wheat and other agriculture. It's very difficult for Ukraine just to surrender that. Well, I say surrender it, just give up trying to get it. And now there had been, Zelensky had wanted Tomahawk cruise missiles from what I'm reading. By the way, the great article on American Family News, AFN.net, about this story you should check out, AFN.net. But President Trump is not at this point going to give the cruise missiles to Ukraine. I guess Zelensky explained it as saying, I guess the president wants to wait until he meets with Putin. Is Zelensky going to meet also in Budapest? This is just Trump and Putin. I didn't realize, now the president said 78% of Ukraine has been taken by Russia. I didn't realize that it was that much, but
what happened to our minerals deal? We're supposed to.
What happened
to our minerals deal where if they give us minerals, we support them? I'm talking about Ukraine. I'm not saying I'm in favor of that. I don't know. I'm just saying, remember that a few months ago?
Yeah, that's only.
Trump said, you give us mineral rights, we're going to be with you. And now you don't hear anything about that anymore.
Yeah, there's no mineral deal.
You didn't research that, Ed?
I'm just saying there's no mineral deal if Russian troops are sitting over the minerals. And that's. We were never going to send troops or get involved in this war. We were going to send ammunition and supplies, but I don't think even Trump's doing that's been a kind of a sticking point between Republicans and Democrats, too, and between Europe and the United States. They wanted us to.
I'm at the place almost where I wish President Trump would say, you know, I wash my hands of this. This is an unfortunate situation between Ukraine and Russia. Unfortunate is a mild word to use here. But millions have been killed, right? Am I right? Both, when you include both sides, many of the Russian soldiers are being sent into war against their own will. They don't support this either. You know, it's Putin's war, basically. So I don't see where President Trump, without having the leverage of using assets owned and operated by the United States of America, both financial and or military, I don't see how he's a player in this. I really don't, because he's not going to give Zelensky anything, and he just keeps meeting after meeting with and phone call after phone call with Putin to no avail. So I don't know what the point is to continue. I don't know where are we trying to get to, except for Trump selling Zelensky needs to give up half his country right now. Right?
By the way, I did look up the Russian control of Ukraine.
Okay,
and total territory of the Ukraine Russia controls 18-20%, but in these important eastern, southeastern regions, Luhansk, they go by oblasts, kind of like we would say region or province. The Donetsk oblast, Zaporizhzhia—I can't pronounce that one.
Yeah, try it
those.
Again.
Those are all in the 70 percentiles, and 99% of Luhansk. So, I think that's what President Trump was talking about. Those regions that the Russians control, they control 70-90% of those areas. So when President Trump says Ukraine should just give up on those, he has a point, because Ukraine's not getting them back unless Russia were to completely withdraw, and they're not doing it.
Okay, but here's the one part of this I'm missing. With President Trump, what is he using as leverage with Vladimir Putin?
I don't think he's using anything for leverage. He did toss out. This is how the Tomahawk cruise missiles came out. President Trump said he was on a phone call, Fred. I think it was. He said, I was on a phone call with Putin, and I told Vladimir, well, maybe I'll give the Tomahawk cruise missiles to Ukraine. Uh-huh. So he may be just saying, listen, if you don't stop right now, I'll give the Tomahawk cruise missiles to Ukraine to fight back with, which could start World War III. That's my take on that. You give Ukraine Tomahawk cruise missiles, they'll hit Moscow and St. Petersburg with them because they've seen their cities obliterated. And once you do that, you risk Russia hitting places in Europe outside of Ukraine, I think. That's just two sides.
I think it just appears to me that President Trump has used up his usefulness in this because he's been trying for a year now, right, to get something done. And I think Vladimir Putin knows that Trump has no cards to play.
Well, he does have. Trump does have cards to play. He's just not going to play them.
Well,
Trump
could what's
say,
the difference?
Trump. Well, Trump could say, if you don't stop talking to Putin, we'll get involved.
Why hasn't he done that yet?
Well, because he doesn't want U.S. troops involved. He doesn't want to risk a wider war in Europe, and Putin knows it.
Well, so I think you're proving my point, although you...
The point is, does Trump have cards to play? He does, but to your point, he's not going to play them because
Trump promised... And Putin knows that.
And Putin knows that.
Right.
And Putin also knows Ukraine's not pushing them out. Yeah. So Putin... And the rest of Europe's not getting involved. So Putin is saying, you guys keep telling me to... They've already said, Russia's already said, their defense minister has said, there is no way we're allowing a pro-Western government in Ukraine. We either will own all of it or we'll have a puppet government in Ukraine. That's our goal.
Okay.
And nobody's going to stop them from doing it.
Nothing's going to stop us now.
That's,
huh?
It's again, to your point, President Trump should not have said, I can get this done in 24 hours during the election. And he is involved trying to appeal to Putin's better nature. I don't think the man has a better nature. And so he is wasting his time. Zelensky does not want to surrender territory.
It is kind of sad, though, in a way, to see Zelensky has – they've been – and I know people say, well, Zelensky in Ukraine is corrupt. Well, okay, I'll give you that, but – I would say 95% of the world is.
Yeah.
Okay. But I would just say this. They've done all they can do to fight back against Russian invasion.
Right.
Right. Of their country, of their sovereign country. And they got some help initially from the United States, money, and from Europe. But I think Zelensky knows that's why he has his hand out, because if he doesn't get any more help from Europe or the United States, especially militarily, then it's over, right? His country will be swallowed up by Russia.
Right. And we were talking about in the first segment about what Trump's saying to Venezuela and Colombia. Okay? You're on our doorstep. All your drugs are coming into our country. So clean it up or else. And I am not excusing what Russia did. Their mentality is the same. Their mentality has been, we are not going to have NATO on our doorstep, and we will take Ukraine to guarantee that.
Right.
So what I'm saying is it's nice to think that Putin will go, oh, okay, well, my bad. But Trump's not doing it when it comes to Venezuela and Colombia.
Yeah.
You protect your people and your national interests.
Fred, what's the next story?
Well, let's finish up.
Good news.
Everybody has heard of the Louvre. Big museum.
Yep. Yes, I've been there.
In France. There you go.
The Mona Lisa. She's still smiling.
Yes. Well, an unknown number of people parading as workers. I don't know, workers on the street. They had yellow jackets on, you know, what we see workers. They had a cherry picker machine. So they're up on the second floor. This is, I think, early this morning, yesterday morning. And they got into the Louvre through upper windows there. They're able to break in there. And they went down and they stole a bunch of precious jewels, crowns, all of this sort of thing. Dozens and dozens of precious diamonds. And they got away. Apparently, they tried to set the place on fire. There was one guy kind of left behind, but he did manage to escape. He was seen trying to...
Ed, you said that sounds like Ocean's 11 or something like
that? Yeah, it sounded like a movie with George Clooney and Brad Pitt. Yeah.
Former jewelry thief Larry Lawton was on Fox this morning saying, looked like an amateur job to him, cut number 16.
It had to be an inside job or inside information. How did they know how thick the glass was? Well, there's an alarm on there. There could have been, they have shock glass things now. There's a bunch of ways this is either semi-amateur because they dropped jewelry. They already got the motorcycles caught. So it's really giving a lot of mixed vibes right now. Obviously, you should have your fence set up before you do a robbery, any robbery. That's number one. Obviously, in these kind of jewels, that have to be broken down because it's too much of a signature piece. But then again, insurance companies for big items like this will give out a reward with no questions asked. And so what they'll do is wait, and they see where the investigation, it's not coming any. They'll put up $1 million for this. Maybe it's worth $3 million. And you could do it to like a very rich eccentric person who wants a signature piece.
So that's why I said I don't have to use a Southern accent if I want to make someone sound.
That guy was a definite New Yorker.
Oh, yeah.
Hey, you know how the law enforcement blew this? These guys were dressed up to look like government or construction workers.
Yes, they were.
If they didn't have a bunch of guys standing around holding shovels, obviously that's not, they should have seen right through that.
Yes. You think somebody was in a pickup smoking a cigarette?
Huh? The law enforcement should have seen right through it. Wait a second.
Is that what you call a caper?
That's a caper.
Okay. Yeah. I've been waiting to use that word for like 5 years. So
as soon as that guy started talking with that New York accent, looked over at you.
Forget about it. We'll be back.
Back when I used to rob people.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.